Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. How are you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing well, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing great. CrimeCon, what's happening?
Well, this year it's in New Orleans, and if you want to know all about it, go to crimecon.com. Now, if you're going to get some tickets, use our discount. It's GenY19, and that's GENWHY19.
We're going to the UK. We're going to go hang out with British people, eat some biscuits, have some tea.
And some chips.
Yeah.
July 6th and 7th, we're going to Manchester and then on to London. The deal with that is we're going to have tickets. Now, we don't have all the details yet, but the venues we are going to be at have limits. So you'll want to stay tuned to our social media and to these episodes, because without that, you may have trouble getting in. So our Twitter is @GenYPod. And if you need any other social media, just search for Generation Y Podcast. You'll find it.
And I don't know how I'm going to do this, but I'm going to make it up to Chicago on July 13th for the True Crime Podcast Festival at the Marriott. Go out, buy tickets, and I will be there along with a whole bunch of other podcasters. So check their website for updates and see if there's anyone else you'd like to hang out with. Their website is tcpf2019.com.
We have some really exciting news. You can now listen to new episodes of Generation Y completely ad-free on Stitcher Premium. In addition to our ad-free episodes, you can also listen to tons of other ad-free Wondery shows. Plus, with Stitcher Premium, you'll get access to hundreds of hours of original content, audio documentaries, and exclusive bonus episodes from some of your other favorite podcasts. You can sign up now for a free month of Stitcher Premium by going to stitcherpremium.com/Wondery and using the promo code Wondery. Then once you're signed up, just download the Stitcher app for iOS or Android and start listening. That's stitcherpremium.com/Wondery and promo code Wondery.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
A lot of the cases we cover, Aaron, there's always two narratives. Is this murder or is this suicide? Is this murder or is this something else? A lot of the times we don't explicitly spell out what the narratives are. Sometimes we feel it's obvious. Sometimes we say things off the cuff that seem out of context because we're speaking to one of the narratives, but we're not putting it into context of here are the two narratives and this is why we're saying something. So sometimes things that we say are very much out of context and people will not understand where we're coming from. So probably do a little bit better about that. But this case has two narratives, cold-blooded murder or a mercy killing. And it's about two friends that go on a trip into the Twilight Zone, apparently.
Let's give a summary, Justin. On August 4th, 1999, Rafi Kodikian and David Coughlin, who were best friends, hiked into Rattlesnake Canyon in Carlsbad Canyon National Park, New Mexico. They meant to only stay for one night, but they got lost on their way back to their car, at least according to Rafi, and things took a bad turn after that. And only one of them made it out alive. Justin, where does this all begin?
Well, David and Rafi were friends for a long time. David was raised in a suburb outside of Boston. He went to the University of Mass at Amherst. After he graduated, he was working in the town of Wellesley. In September of 1999, David was going to begin graduate school at UC Santa Barbara. He wanted to get a master's degree in environmental science. He had a girlfriend at the time, Sonnet Frost. Love the name. Rafi, he grew up in Pennsylvania, Doylestown, Pennsylvania. It was pretty close to Philadelphia. He went to Northeastern University with a journalism major, lived in West Roxbury area of Boston. He was really into journalism because he was inspired by Jack Kerouac. Jack had written multiple books and articles and whatnot. One of the books was called On the Road. It's this whole long story about his travels. So Rafi, he had wrote several freelance stories for the Boston Globe. They were articles about his 1997 solo cross-country trip that took him 10 weeks and across 25 states. He camped for most of it, and after he graduated, he worked at a financial firm. So he took this road trip because he was inspired by that Jack Kerouac book, and he really wanted to do this road trip again, especially with his best friend David. When David was planning to drive to Santa Barbara by himself, Rafi wanted to go, but it was really short notice, and he didn't think he could take time off work. David delayed a little bit trying to make it so it would happen, but really, in the beginning, Rafi's like, I can't go, but I'll help you with this road trip. And he took time to plan it out, which way he should go, where he should camp and stuff, because Rafi was not planning on joining him. And it was very last minute that Rafi was allowed to take off work and go. So not exactly a planned trip with Rafi.
So the trip was planned to be a five-day trip, and they left Boston and headed to Boylestown, which is Raffi's hometown. And then they went on to visit Dave's sister in Virginia, on to Nashville, Memphis, New Orleans, and then on to Austin, Texas. It was after that that they decided to go on to Carlsbad, New Mexico. But why, Justin?
Well, that was where they were going to camp in the desert. That was his inspiration from his solo trip, was he was very taken by the vastness and the mystique of the desert.
Hadn't they spoken with someone who had given them some different options?
Well, once they got there, they stopped for gas at a Texaco station, and the gas station attendant was just asking them what they were up to, and they were telling them that they were going to go camping, and they wanted some options. So the Texaco gas station attendant said, you can go camp here, or you can go to the caverns, meaning Carlsbad Caverns. And they thought that sounded great. So they went with the second option and went to the caverns. And what this was is a huge national park. Well, it's actually one of the smaller national parks, but it's still thousands of acres. So it's pretty big. And when they get there, they talk to the ranger station. They get a camping permit for one night. And then they go and park their car down in this parking area. And then they pick up their bags, their tents, a bottle of Gatorade, a few bottles of water, some beans, some hot dogs, not much, because they're only planning on staying one night.
Now, this park is actually in the Chihuahuan Desert, and I looked it up, and apparently the Chihuahuan Desert is the largest desert in North America.
It's vast. Now, this park is not the biggest park as far as the borders of it, but this is a huge desert and it can be a pretty scary place. They end up walking, I don't know, it's like a mile from the car down into a place called Rattlesnake Canyon.
That sounds friendly.
Yeah. They go down into this canyon and there's these little stones that are placed at the beginning and the exit of the trail.
They're called cairns.
Yeah. And they're not that obvious, actually, as much as some people will be like, yeah, they're the markers for the trail. Well, there's rocks and stones everywhere. So these are just semi out of place rocks that mark a trail. But these stones are other places naturally. So it's not the clearest markings, but it's, you know, if you're just out there with the kids for the day, sure, I'm sure you could find these stones. So that night they drink their Gatorade, and as they're cooking their hot dogs, they're like, oh, we need some water to boil them. So they use like one of the bottles of water to boil these hot dogs with. And they only have like three bottles of water. They enjoy the night in the desert. It's pretty incredible.
So it was a Wednesday night. Since they're only staying one night, they don't have plans to stay there multiple nights, so they didn't come prepared for a stay. It's just, it's like a stop.
Yeah. In fact, they probably had more supplies on them than I would have brought. I would have had like my phone and a sleeping bag. That's it.
And a bottle of water.
I don't even know if I would have had a bottle of water, but yeah.
Well, the ranger station, though, the person there told them, hey, if you go out there, you need to have a gallon of water with you per day. They were just staying a night, yeah. So they're like, we don't need all that.
Yeah. I mean, they got to the ranger station at like 6:30-ish and weren't setting up camp until 8:30-ish. You know, and they're planning to leave first thing in the morning. And at 8:30, sure, the sun's down and they're a little in a hurry to get their camp set up. Also, they were looking for campsites, and this place doesn't have campsites. This place is just open desert.
So, roughing it.
Yeah. There's no glamping happening here.
Yeah, it's funny because people will say, yeah, I went camping. But generally when you go camping, there are markers, there are dedicated campsites. And heck, a lot of people, they show up in their RVs or they bring their campers along. But these guys, they don't really know much about camping in the desert, do they?
Nothing. They know nothing. They are city slickers from Boston and Philly. I mean, come on.
Okay, so let's talk about this because they're planning to leave the next day
And so you would think this story is going nowhere because they just get up and head back to their car and drive away, right?
Well, yeah, but they're camping in Rattlesnake Canyon. So they pack up their stuff in the morning. They drink any water they had left. They were told to leave no trace, which is pack up all your stuff, no garbage, nothing, and take it all with you. So they do that. They start hiking back up the side of the canyon, and they follow the trail into a field. And then in about a few hundred yards, they're back on the riverbed, back at the bottom of the canyon. So, all right, we just went in a circle.
Yeah, it's like the Blair Witch Project movie, where they think they're heading in one direction, they end up back where they started.
And technically, they're probably not even back where they started. They probably just went further down into the canyon, because they didn't even know they were going downhill, because they thought they were going uphill. So they totally missed the entrance to the trail to get back to their car. They start walking around some more. They're still trying to find that entrance. At first, they're laughing about it. You know, it's like 8:30 in the morning. They're wandering around. By noon, they actually pull out their map that they bought, and it's a topographical map. And you think, well, they have a map, but you gotta realize this is before GPS and stuff was a big hit. How many of you know how to read a topographical map?
Have you looked at one?
Yes. I was in the military, so I was trained how to read one.
Well, I was never taught how to read one, and I think it would probably be next to useless for me.
I think it would actually be next to useless for most people, unless you were trained. In the fact that Rangers are selling this map for $10 or whatever it was, you might as well have handed them a bar of soap.
See, you'd think with having all this information, they could find their way around and find their way out, but you know, I just imagined that it would have been better if they had just taken a scrap of paper out and just squiggled some lines and some arrows and put north on there and said, here's where you want to go to come back out.
Well, wherever they parked their car, they should have just pitched their tent right next to their car.
But that wouldn't be an adventure, Justin.
No, it wouldn't.
And one of the reasons they went there is they wanted to hike a bit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They wanted to go somewhere where there wasn't any civilization, so they could see the stars and just be in a private area. By noon, they're splitting up, searching for this this entrance. By noon, the temperature has hit 100 degrees, and they still have 6-7 hours more of daylight of 100 degree temperatures. So they're sweating bad. And when it starts getting dark again, they decide, you know what? We're going to go find some shade, cool off, and I guess we're spending another night here. We'll set back out in the morning. Now, that night, there's like three mountainous peaks that they can see. What appears to be car headlights goes past one of the mountainous peaks. So they go, oh my gosh, there must be a road up there. There must be cars up there. They decide in the morning that they're going to look for that entrance one more time, but they're going to go walk up to the top of that peak, find that road where they saw the headlights of the car. So they go to sleep, no more hot dogs, no more water, nothing. In the morning, they get up, they start making their way up this mountain, and it takes them 3 to 4 hours to get to the top of this mountain. And every time they think they're at the top, they're not. And they've sweated so much that dehydration is already setting in. They're eating little berries and stuff off cactuses that are kind of sweet and sour, you know, if they're bitter, if they're not ripe. And they finally get to the top of this peak, and they're just at the top of a mountain looking over the entire desert. There's no road. And whatever they thought they saw the night before, headlights, they didn't see that. Maybe it was an airplane. Maybe it was just lights somewhere else bouncing off the peak. But there's no road. There's nothing. From this height, it said that they should have been able to see their car, possibly the ranger station and other things. But according to them, they don't see nothing. They're exhausted, tired, and are angry that they just expend all this energy climbing to the top of a mountain to find nothing. They have a journal on them, a spiral notebook, and they're actually writing in it. Here's one of their entries after they've expend all this energy. Help, help. We filled out a backcountry card on Wednesday evening and headed down. Camped Wednesday, started back Thursday morning, but couldn't find the entrance to the trail leading back to the car. Looked all day Thursday, slept here Thursday night, saw headlights on mountain number 3, because there's 3 peaks. We have minimal water and been eating cactus fruit. We need help. We headed towards what appeared to be a ranch foundation. If we reach our car, we will go back to the visitor center and then attempt to come back. Now, they found this decimated ranch, which was some old ruin. And at that point, Rafi doesn't pass out, but what I call in the military is falling out. And that's when you kind of pass out from exhaustion, heat exhaustion, whatnot. And Rafi's telling Dave, leave me. Go get help. I don't think I can continue on. And Dave says, I'm not going to leave you, buddy. I'm here for you. And they find some shrubbery. They find somewhere that has shade because this desert sun, if you've never been in it, it's just hellacious. And they're just trying to find anywhere to get out of the sun because it's so hot. Also, these shrubs that they're trudging through or getting underneath, they have thorns. And it's tearing their shins apart. And if they stay in one place too long, fire ants start biting them. This is a miserable existence right now. They're hot, they're bleeding, and they're being bit. Sounds like a great camping trip, doesn't it, Aaron? Now, do you want to go to Rattlesnake Canyon with me?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. As long as we have a water truck with us.
Yeah.
So running out of water, out of food, and they're living on this, what is it, prickly pear cactus?
Yeah, it's like this little berry thing that's off the cactus.
They're eating it, but it's making them sick, isn't it?
Well, they think that it's giving them moisture. But a funny thing about this cactus is if it's not ripe, it will make you sick. It will make you violently ill. So they think that they're getting sustenance, and they don't even know if this cactus berry is poisonous or not. It's only edible when it's ripe. And they're talking about how bitter it tastes or how sweet it tastes. Well, they're eating both ripe and unripe cactus berries.
There are symptoms associated with unripened cactus. That includes bloating, isn't vomiting part of it, diarrhea. But what you said, though, was they think they're getting sustenance. So what's going on is they think they're doing their best to make it, but it almost feels like they're not going to make it. Like their bodies are just not coping anymore. To them, it's you start to lose hope because you don't have, your body's not responding to all you have to give it.
Yeah. They decide to go back down into the canyon, back down to the riverbed to find shade. And they start burning things because they think, well, we'll send a smoke signal. You know, you're not allowed to set fires in the desert because it's really dry and you can start a huge brush fire. So the problem is they're back down in the deepest part of this canyon with the least amount of visibility, but the most amount of shade. And they're trying to burn things. They realize that the brush and shrubbery that they're burning isn't putting off a lot of smoke. So they throw in a sleeping bag and that puts off more smoke. But the wind or the slight breeze comes through the canyon and takes the smoke more horizontal and not vertical. They're trying to burn things and they're not getting anywhere with it.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
Because they don't have any water, they also attempt to drink their own urine. But they have this idea that they need to filter it. So they're using Raffi's baseball cap.
Yeah, they pee through a cap into a bottle and then try to drink it. And it's just nasty. And by the way, don't ever drink your own piss. It's not good for you. It's a concentrated version of all the toxins that your body's trying to get rid of. That final night, they're talking about if they're going to make it or not. Buzzards are actually landing next to them and waiting. That's quite a sight, a wild animal sitting next to you, waiting for you to die or be too weak to fight back.
Can we say that they're from Boston again? I mean, they're not used to seeing this, and they're not used to being in the desert. They're not used to this struggle. And now they actually have predators landing nearby who are eyeing them. And I think, according to Raffi, at least, he thinks that they're preparing to attack them.
Man, what was the case we did? The girls from Panama? Lost girls in Panama? Yeah. And they were way more prepared. This trip has taken a turn for the worse. That night, Dave is so sick that Raffi's description is that he's on all fours, just vomiting and dry heaving because he has nothing to expel. And he's doing this for hours all night long.
And according to Raffi, David would vomit, but it would literally get caught in his throat. And he said he would have to reach over and pull it out because it was just getting caught.
Yeah, it's not liquid anymore. It's just thick mucus and bile.
This is necessary because of what happens next.
Dave doesn't think help's coming. They're like, we bought a 1-day pass. It's almost day 4 here. No one's coming for us. And at certain times during this whole thing, they actually thought that the Rangers were playing tricks on them. They were hallucinating water bottles. They were hallucinating those rocks with the at the entrance of the trail. Just weird things because they're so dehydrated.
And Raffi even had strange dreams where he said he dreamt that there were these other people building machines to help them get out, but that he and David didn't have the parts necessary to build what they needed to build to get out.
If you've ever had a fever dream, you know, when you're super sick and you're just, you know, some people can take hallucinogens for this, but other people, if you don't do drugs, think of a fever dream or a dehydration dream, essentially, is what they're having. And Dave, who has eaten these berries, and Raffi has too, they're throwing up, they're miserable, they're bleeding, they're dehydrated, and vomiting isn't helping this. And Dave, according to Raffi, is asking him to please kill him, to end his life. So Raffi pulls out a knife. They try to cut their wrists.
They're at their end. They can't take it anymore.
Yeah. Rafi says, well, I'm the stronger, or I have more strength, so I'll try to cut my wrists and cut your wrists. They're scraping this knife down their arms, and they're barely breaking the skin. They're so weak. They give up for a while. Rafi's trying to get Dave to sit up because he thinks that he's going to choke on his vomit. But every time he gets Dave to sit up, it makes him more dizzy and vomit more. And he says he's too weak to sit up. But Rafi's able to like kind of pull him up and sit him up, and they can sit back to back. Rafi's doing what he can, according to him. But Dave has had enough. So before dawn, August 9th, 1999, David is now begging Rafi to kill him. Rafi says that he resisted at first. He didn't like the idea. According to Rafi, eventually Dave got down on his back and he turned to him and said, you've got to end this. And Rafi doesn't want to. He says, get the knife. Rafi says, no. He reaches up and squeezes Rafi really hard and tells him to stop messing around. You know they're not coming. Rafi agrees. He says, I know they're not coming. So you got to get the knife, get next to me, and put it through my chest. Don't mess it up. He's using more colorful language. So Rafi got next to him, and Dave asks him again. He's like, you need to end me. And Rafi pulls out the knife, and he stabs Dave in the chest, and I think he hits his lung on the first stab because he feels air, but he doesn't see any blood. And then he pulls it out and he says, are you still alive? And Dave says, yes, please keep going. And Rafi stabs him a second time, and this time hits him in the heart. He asks him, are you still feeling pain? And Dave says, no, but he's still responding. So Dave says, pull the knife out. Rafi pulls the knife out. He sees blood, so he knows that he's stabbed him better than he did the first time because he's so weak and he can't really get the knife through his shirt and into his chest. And then he smothers Dave's face a little bit, obstruct his breathing to try to hurry this along and make it as painless as possible. Dave will end up dying, passing away. Rafi sees the buzzards circling and gives his friend a cowboy burial. And what does that entail, Aaron?
Well, he's not going to be doing any digging. So what he does is he starts gathering rocks and placing rocks on his friend. And I think the rocks, once he gets done, they're about there's about 7 feet of rocks, you know, to cover his friend's body. And then some of these rocks are 50, 60 pounds in weight.
It's actually, you know, I won't say it's ornate, but it's a very respectful thing to do because he doesn't want his buddy to be picked apart by birds, and he could have just left him there. He didn't have to do any kind of burial. So I see this as a show of respect. Rafi's in a bad way. He thinks he's going to die. He's given up. So he gets back under the rain flap of the tent. Like, I think the tent's like been just torn apart by the shrubbery and all this. So all they have left is just pieces of the tent. And Rafi's laying under it, hoping to get shade.
So when he stabbed his friend, this was sometime around 6 a.m., right?
Yeah.
And around 10 a.m., a ranger walks up. The ranger had seen the car, thought it was strange because the car had obviously been there a while.
Yeah, so the rangers came across their camping permit from 4 days earlier. These guys hadn't checked in. Ranger thought, well, let's go look for them. So he got another ranger to go walk down there with him. So there's two guys walking around. One's a pretty seasoned ranger and the other one's pretty green. They come across the car, they sort of split up, and the one ranger's like, I'm going to go look over this cliff to see if I can find where these guys are camping at.
The ranger that found Raffi, his name was Lance Mattson, and he said he showed up about 10 a.m. So they need to get Raffi help. But before anything else happens, what does Raffi say to this ranger when he sees him?
Well, he says, "I hope you brought water." The ranger gives him water, tells him to drink it slowly. The ranger asks him, "Where's your buddy?" And Raffi points over at this pile of rocks. And the ranger looks around, says, "Where?" And Rafi's like, "He's right there. I killed him."
So he admits right off the bat, there's no mystery here. It's not like he had an accident. No, I killed him.
Yeah.
And Rafi's drinking this water, but it's not staying down.
No, he's vomiting it back up, because when you're that dehydrated, your body can't absorb water very well, so it just rejects it. But at this point, the ranger says, "Did you shoot him?" Raffi says, "No, I stabbed him." And he says, "Do you have a knife?" Raffi produces the knife, and the ranger doesn't feel really scared or threatened. I mean, it's an interesting, kind of shocking situation they found themselves in. He says that Raffi is slow to respond, but coherent. So he'll ask him, like, "Where's the knife?" And Raffi will pause and then get the knife. "You know, what's your name?" "Raffi." You know, it's like this slow, but he is responding, giving answers.
A second ranger shows up by the name of Masia. What do these rangers do for Raffi at this point? Because, I mean, he needs rescuing. He's dehydrated.
Well, they call in air rescue. An airlift, essentially a Black Hawk helicopter that's equipped with medical equipment. They're waiting for the helicopter, which I'm sure if you're stranded anywhere and then somebody's coming to rescue you, at that point, you just want to get the heck out of there. But it takes a while for this helicopter to get out there. And Raffi says, "My grandmother could have flown that helicopter here faster."
Well, let me tell you, I'm sure that at least one of these rangers got a little ticked off at that, right? I mean, just this idea that you're trying to do your best to help somebody, they seem a little ungrateful.
Well, and the other thing that this ranger is feeling is, how are you so coherent that you still have a sense of humor? But I mean, I've been in a serious car wreck and I would still crack a joke. I've even been dehydrated and hospitalized and still was making fun of people. So I'm like Raffi. I have a quick wit that even on my deathbed, I'll probably be talking smack to people. So anyways.
So he didn't mean anything bad by what he said. He's just cracking a joke.
Or he's grumpy because he's like, "Get me out of here." Yeah. So they get an IV in him. On the desert riverbed, they're already hydrating him. They get him in this helicopter and they airlift him over to the local hospital.
Now, Masia made the comment, and he's one of the rangers, he felt it very odd that he had responded so well to the hydration with the IV. And so he was like, how did he recover so quickly?
Well, yeah, they discharged him from the hospital after like an hour.
But he was saying this as he was being taken away from the desert.
Yeah.
Like he felt it was weird that when he was leaving, that Raffi seemed back to what you would say is normal.
Well, that's an interesting comment for him to make. When you're dehydrated, you're not in a good way. But as soon as you start taking fluids, you bounce back very quickly. And me and you watch MMA and the UFC. We've seen fighters completely deplete their body of almost all of its water to make weight and then take IVs and bounce back. Now, it's not the best way to do it. It's not healthy because, you know, if the membrane around your brain doesn't have enough water around it, it's not good for you. But
it starts depleting and your brain can actually shrink.
Yeah.
And it affects your cognitive ability.
And if you're not fully hydrated and somebody punches you in the head, you have no padding for your brain to bump around into. But cognitive abilities, being with it, as soon as you take fluids, you start coming back pretty quick. Within hours, you're able to answer questions and whatever. And being that Rafi was not totally out of it, but obviously extremely dehydrated if he's vomiting water back up. But just because he's somewhat coherent doesn't mean that he's not dehydrated.
So the evidence they had, because at this point, Rafi Kodikian admitted that he killed David Coughlin. And so this is investigated. And what do they have? They have David's body, which they remove. And they also have this journal, which they had both written in. In fact, David had even written a note to his girlfriend in there.
They were writing goodbye notes. I'm not going to make it. What they don't write is, we're planning on killing each other. That's not in there. But goodbye world is. The other thing that the Rangers notice is the lines on their arm, the suicide attempt, the cutting, the scrapes on their arm are less deep than, say, the scrapes on their shins from the brush. So they're thinking, well, how are you not strong enough to cut your own wrist, but you're strong enough to stab him, or you're strong enough to move rocks to build this burial for him?
Well, before we get to the trial, the report that the medical examiner produced concluded that David was moderately to severely dehydrated at the time that he had died. And it was also determined later on that if he had been alive when the rescuers got there, David would have recovered fully. What does this say? I mean, the Eddy County Sheriff's by the name of Click said, "I don't know too many people who would do away with their best friend." So as you know, if you take the medical examiner's report and comments from the county sheriff, Click, this is a murder, straight up. There's no doubt here.
Well, if they knew help was coming, they would have held out, I'm sure. Also, another thing they hold against him is they have this can of beans. I'm like, why didn't you eat your can of beans? You know, there's water in there.
And sodium.
Yeah, and that's their answer is, or at least Rafi's answer is, there's a lot of salt in there. And I thought that would dehydrate me more. I thought it was mostly syrup or gravy, not water, with a bunch of salt. So he didn't want to eat it. I get it. They were eating berries because they know that the berries had more water content than beans would.
But he was wrong.
Oh, yeah. It was a bad decision.
But we've all done that. We've all assumed certain things about something, and then we were wrong.
Well, they assumed that rescue would come searching for them after a day.
Right, because they had written down they were planning to stay for the night,
yeah. And
they would be gone the next day.
But that's not how it works. The camping permits aren't exactly used to see who's overstayed their welcome or who's lost.
Yeah, they're just tracking activity. And also, if they were to go down into these areas and find trash or anything like that, then they would have an idea of who did it, who was responsible.
They sent a second helicopter to the scene when the investigators were there, and that second helicopter decided to do a low pass over the crime scene. What do you think that did?
Well, since the tent was scraps, I think a lot of stuff blew away.
So the entire crime scene, if you look at it that way, was completely destroyed by the second helicopter. So all they have is what they photographed and videoed before that helicopter came and destroyed their crime scene. Now, this knife that he used, they find microscopic fibers from their clothing and the sleeping bag. The investigators theorize that Rafi waited for Dave to fall asleep and then stabbed him while he was asleep through the sleeping bag and burned the sleeping bag. I can see where they got that. They burned the sleeping bag. And if they find fibers on the knife, then hey, that's a valid idea. But you might have fibers on that knife by just sleeping in a sleeping bag with that knife in your pocket or on your person. It doesn't mean that you stabbed through it.
Did he ever talk about when they burned the sleeping bag, did they attempt to cut the sleeping bag into pieces to burn it?
They just said they burned it, so it didn't really give too much detail. So they arrest Rafi as soon as he's discharged from the hospital. He's put in jail. The judge in the county sets bail at $50,000. And this is the highest bail this judge has ever set in his career. Normally, people can't come up with $50,000. Rafi's father, he gets a money order, wires some money down there, gets a cashier's check, and shows up and bails his son out of jail with 50 grand. This is surprising to the judge and the people down there because they're like, who has that kind of money? But they do.
Rafi Kodikian is charged with murder. Rafi is represented by a couple of attorneys, Gary Mitchell and Shauna Boyne. Gary Mitchell comes up with this idea to argue that Rafi was suffering from involuntary intoxication because he was so dehydrated. But the judge rules against it, saying that he didn't ingest anything to cause the intoxication.
It was a lack of ingestion that caused it, but there's different arguments you can make. Here are the defenses that you can use in New Mexico. Alibi, entrapment, self-defense, duress, insanity, or involuntary intoxication. These are the only options his defense had to choose from. They were wanting to go with temporary insanity, but no one goes with that, and it seems to never work. Duress, well, no one was holding a gun to his head. Self-defense, no. Entrapment, no. Alibi, he admitted that he did it. So involuntary intoxication seems to be the best fit for this defense. But even that got shot down.
Let me say this too. The deputy district attorney actually believes Rafi's story, doesn't he? I mean, when Rafi says, here's everything that happened, he doesn't disagree with it. Because according to him, the experts that came in and explained what they were probably going through, it explained everything. It made sense. But the problem that the defense had was that this is still murder. It doesn't matter that you think you're being merciful. Doesn't anyone remember the guy who was putting people to death at, you know, by their requests?
Dr. Kevorkian.
Yeah, he was putting people to death because they were asking for it. And he still ended up in a whole lot of trouble for that. Why? Because there is no mercy killing allowance here. I mean, you can't do it.
This is the quote he gives. You don't get to kill someone in the state of New Mexico just because they asked you to. That's the law.
So in other words, hey, we believe what you're saying. We hear you. But you still broke the law.
Exactly. Now, the investigators in the sheriff's office, they're trying to find motive here. They're going back into Rafi's background. They found he had an ex-girlfriend who they think might have dated Dave also. So they're thinking, well, this was a jealousy thing, love triangle. They bring up the fibers on the knife, stabbing through the sleeping bag. They're really trying to put this whole thing together. But when they go to interview Rafi's ex-girlfriend, she pretty much refuses. And the whole homicide investigation dies.
Yeah, Kirsten Swan actually lived with both Rafi Kodikian and David Coughlin. And she said, I never dated David. And she said that after she and Rafi had broken up, that they remained great friends. They all hung out together. It was like this, they were just all buddies. And so when they were trying to figure out, they went and talked to everybody they could. They talked to coworkers, family members, you name it. And no one that they found could say anything that would lead them to believe that Rafi could do this.
And they kept trying, though. They actually went to Boston, found a 1996 murder of a woman named Katrina Holmer, who was a 19-year-old Swedish woman. She was found in a dumpster, like her torso was severed and limbs removed. And they're like, oh, what if this was Rafi? You start building a narrative against somebody. You get the media involved. You can say whatever you want, but nobody's believing this narrative. And the prosecution definitely drops the narrative and just says, no, he admits he killed this guy. And we're just going to go with that.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
He admits he killed this guy, and we're just going to go with that.
Yeah, it's not difficult because, again, he broke the law.
Yeah, he doesn't have to prove motive. He doesn't have to prove anything. The guy admitted it.
And so for the prosecutor, this isn't about, is Rafi a good guy? Did he mean harm? Did he not mean harm? This is just, he broke the law, so we'll prosecute him. And that leaves Rafi's attorneys in a kind of a tough place. But I would say they did the best they could, which was, all right, tell you what, we'll plead second degree murder, right?
Yeah, he pleaded no contest to second degree murder.
And that's really all they could do. Again, he broke the law. For those in the public, we want to know, did he mean it? Did he not mean it? Was he really trying to do something at the behest of his friend? What were the motives here? How did it go down and why? Well, we know all this because there was a journal. Rafi made it out. He told us the story. All of the evidence supports his story. Also, during the trial, a lot was made of dehydration and the effects it has on your body and your mind. The experts all seem to agree that your cognitive ability is affected. Given how dehydrated they were, it was believable that they would be suffering from, I don't know what you'd want to call it.
Delusional mood swings, not being coherent.
Yeah, delusions. But again, the prosecutor didn't seem to doubt Rafi's story. It was just about how the law was going to be applied in this case. During his sentencing, Rafi testified about his actions leading up to David's fatal stabbing. This is what he said. What I thought I was doing was keeping my friend from going through 12 to 24 hours of hell before he died. And the prosecutor asked, it wasn't mental illness that made you kill him, it was mercy. And Rafi's response was, that's the way I see it, yeah. So all we're left with was, he broke the law. And according to the law in New Mexico, he committed murder. But the judge, who has the power to make something happen in Rafi's favor, does that, I think, when he says, we're giving you 15 years, but I'm suspending 13 of those.
So he gives him 24 months or 2 years. But if he screws up, he gets the full 15 once he's out.
Yeah, he has 5 years of probation. So it's 2 years in prison, 5 years of probation once he's out.
Now, a lot of people think this man just got away with murder. I think he got away with killing somebody, but if you think murder's malicious, then I guess what's the proof there? If he wasn't planning this, because he wasn't even going to go on this road trip. He wasn't planning to do it in Rattlesnake Canyon because that was a last minute decision after they talked to a gas station attendant. And then they end up being lost in a desert. They both are claiming and admitting in a journal that they're not doing too well and they're saying their goodbyes. And if you think that you could spend some time in the desert and not get lost, Well, good for you. I'm glad you're an outdoorsy person. But if there's this whole show called I Shouldn't Be Alive, where every other episode is about a family or a person that goes 5 feet off a trail and almost meets their demise.
Yeah, I mean, every tree looks the same, right? No, I think a lot of this stems from the fact that the people who live in that area understand how the desert works. They understand what they need to do to survive. They pay attention when they're coming down a path. They know the cairns to look for, but they just can't imagine that there are these city guys coming from Boston who don't have any idea how to deal with the desert and weren't prepared to stay beyond a night. They just can't get beyond that because in their minds, oh, well, here's what you do. And they didn't do that. So there must be something suspicious about it. Rafi must have planned this. And how could he do that to his friend? That's everything that they're saying. They're also criticizing them for being wussies. And I've modified the language there. But this is, to me, unbelievable because it shows once again that there are people who cannot put themselves in another person's shoes because they just can't get there. They cannot imagine how someone wouldn't know how to survive in the desert. When I can tell you right now, I would probably get lost out there. I could see that happening.
Well, a year after Rafi's sentence, a man, a hiker named Brian Tenney, was from Philadelphia. He was out there walking in Rattlesnake Canyon, and he noticed an envelope lying on the canyon floor with a letter from a woman named Emily Schulman. She explains that she's lost in Rattlesnake Canyon, and she needs help. Eventually, this guy will go and call for help. The ranger team, the same ranger team that found Rafi and Dave, will go out and search Rattlesnake Canyon. And after many hours, they'll call off the search and call in an airplane. They will find Emily after 3 p.m. She was about a mile west of the exit trail, waving a shirt. I mean, this is another person that got lost in the same exact location. So it's not unbelievable that they were lost there. And Aaron, you said it's unbelievable that these people don't empathize with these men. They don't put themselves in their shoes. I don't find it unbelievable at all. I can read any comments out on the internet and everyone just blames everybody for all their problems. And no one has any empathy out there. It's pretty disgusting. So I'm not surprised to hear this counter narrative about these men and what Rafi did.
Yeah, one of the things that really struck me about it too was when I heard the interviews with some of the people from that town, and I'm not saying they were all like that. It's like anything else. You have news media going out for interviews and they're showing you certain ones. Well, the people I heard from, it really struck me that it was almost like they're on a higher level. They're better than these guys were. Oh, I wouldn't have done that. That wouldn't have happened to me. How callous is that? There's no empathy here. At least the judge had empathy. And at least even the attorneys who were just doing their job, they seem to have some empathy. But of course, there are always those who are willing to blame the victim.
At David's funeral, his family began to give their memories of David. They ask the congregation and other family members to pray for Rafi. And this actually causes a stir because it's them saying, we believe him. It's them saying, we don't think what he did was malicious. I won't say that all of them support Rafi, but that's a pretty bold statement and a pretty bold stand to take at the funeral of your own dead son.
Yeah, they let it be known that they felt that he didn't do it maliciously because they understood that David and Rafi were best friends. And that meant something to them. And it's something that they knew. I mean, that's why they believed him. I mean, he loved his friend Rafi. It's nice to see that that counts. right?
Absolutely.
The people in this town were upset with the sentence, were upset with the outcome, but the only family with a dog in the race wasn't upset. So who's the justice for? Did it affect you personally? No. And I don't understand why the townspeople in this place were upset with the verdict when they're not the ones. It was two guys from the Northeast.
Well, it happened in their backyard. That's why they're upset. And they wouldn't have done it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's not everybody. I don't think everybody in the town's upset. Again, it's the media recorded interviews with people. That's how it came across. But as we know, the sample size is small.
So I would like to hear your take on this. I don't think a mercy killing should be so universally accepted that anyone says, hey, kill me, and then you can just do it and get away with it, because it's not that simple. But what should the verdict be for a mercy killing? How should we approach a case like this? I think the judge did what he could. He took all the mitigating circumstances and gave his sentence. And even the prosecutor, who said that he was looking for 5 to 8 years, said that he was satisfied with 2 when it was all said and done.
Yeah, there was no mitigating circumstance here that wiped out any time in prison anyway. And that's where I guess perhaps some judge might have gone that way if they could do it. I don't know why they couldn't. His friend was begging him, please kill me. I don't know. I think everyone should at least take a little time and think about that. Are you really going to deny your friend, someone who's your best friend, that request just because you're worried about, I might go to prison? I mean, are you really thinking about prison when you're dehydrated and you think buzzards are going to eat you at any minute?
Yeah, I don't think that the law of the land is going to sway me in my decisions when I'm in that situation.
In the end, this is a man who, at the behest of his friend, did something that put himself at great risk. If he is rescued, which of course he didn't believe he was, but if he gets rescued, he's facing a murder charge here. And how is he going to argue against it? We saw it didn't work.
Yeah.
The prosecutor had a quote that I think really gives his mindset on this case. Where there's life, there's hope. Do we want to live in a society where people can kill other people just because they imagine they're in a desperate situation? I think the answer is obviously no.
There's a book out there called Journal of the Dead. It's by Jason Kirsten.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available
Now,